Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Russian state media saying that talks with Ukraine on ending the war have stopped for the day. The talks not expected to heed much progress. Over the weekend, Ukraine launched a large drone attack on Russian air bases, one of them thousands of miles away. ABC's Patrick Rievel with more on how they did it.
What Ukraine's Domestic Intelligence Service, the SBU, has said they did is that over the course of 18 months, they first smuggled in these simple commercial drones that have been adapted. And then that they also smuggled in small wooden huts, basically sheds. And then these sheds were put on the back of trucks to transport them. We saw these amazing videos that show drones just emerging from the containers and then heading towards these Russian bases.
A 45-year-old man in custody in Boulder, Colorado, after allegedly throwing makeshift flamethrowers and Molotov cocktails at marchers who were calling for the release of all the hostages in Gaza. Eight people hurt, at least one critically burned. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. State Democrats have introduced legislation to amend language in the state constitution to better reflect the 2015 U.S. Supreme Court decision that legalized gay marriage. In addition to further solidifying the legalization of gay marriage in the state, lawmakers have also introduced the Marriage and Family Equality Act. That legislation is meant to update the language in state laws surrounding same-sex marriage and parental rights, making them more gender-neutral. The bills are currently being circulated for co-sponsorship in the state legislature. State Republicans are proposing an increase in state payments to individual municipalities to cover the expenses of providing services like fire, law enforcement, and sanitation to state buildings. Governor Tony Evers included a $17 million increase for the Municipal Service Payments Program in his proposed biennial state budget, but Republican lawmakers are proposing a $31 million increase. They say that individual municipalities should not be on the hook to provide services to the state without proper financial reimbursement. Superior officials celebrated the grand opening of a newly restored commercial shipping dock on Wednesday. The dock rehabilitation project cost a total of roughly $28 million, with state and federal grants contributing about $15 million. It will also allow Sea Rice Co. to relocate its shipping operations from across the state line in Duluth to the new dock in Superior, which has not been used in 30 years. City officials say the new dock will make shipping operations for the company more efficient, add good jobs, and generate more economic impact. Shell Lake School District Superintendent Todd Fellhofer recently provided another update on the district's financial situation after failing to pass a referendum in the November and April elections. The district proposed a four-year non-recurring operational referendum in both elections, which failed each time. Officials have been working with State Senator Romaine Quinn to seek additional funding as it faces a budget deficit that could result in significant cuts. District officials also say a federal mental health grant is set to expire earlier than anticipated. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On to Cincinnati. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers at Great American Ballpark tonight to open a three-game set against the Cincinnati Reds, the crew coming off a 5-2 win over the Phillies yesterday to complete the sweep, but they lost designated hitter Christian Yelich. Hit by a pitch from the Phillies left-hander, Ranger Suarez, in the first inning.
Yeah, he got me pretty good. I hit the knob a little bit, just crushed the bottom of my hand also, so it is what it is. That stuff happens, but swelled up and made it tough to grip the bat. And, you know, it's your bottom hand, so. You don't have that. It's not strong enough, so made it tough.
X-rays after the game were negative. In golf, Maya Stark of Sweden, the winner of the Women's U.S. Open at Erin Hills in Wisconsin. She says she reached out to her coach at the start of the week for some last-minute pointers.
You know, I had my coach here this week, and I texted him a couple of things, and I said, what do I do if my putting feels like this? And he just nailed the advice this week.
That's golfer Maya Stark. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
We will have a little more of that smoky haze in the air today, otherwise partly cloudy, warm, and breezy. We'll get to the upper 80s for a high this afternoon. Scattered thunderstorms tonight and again tomorrow, and there could be some locally heavy rain of a half inch to an inch or more. Our high tomorrow will be cooler in the low to mid 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 65.
Did you know? VA home loans are a key to home ownership for those who served.
In the military, we make a lot of sacrifices, and with the VA loan, it makes it easier for us to get a home. We were able to purchase this home and then use the money that we were going to use as a down to actually fix up the home. I would tell anybody who is interested in getting a VA loan to just do it.
To learn more about VA home loans, visit va.gov/homeloans.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Matt Miller, Milwaukee-based film critic. The film Sinners, the more distance I have from it, the more I liked it. Is that an Oscar film?
I think there is a love for what Sinners is doing, that a studio movie was this interesting and creative and thoughtful, but also entertaining. This is not the last you will hear about Sinners this year. I'd be shocked if it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll check in with State Senator Calda Royce from the Joint Finance Committee on the state budget and also news headlines for the folks at Wisconsin Watch. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment as well on the live stream. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, coming up on the show, economics professor Rick Reed will be here after the 9:30 news. It's Econ 101 with Jane and Greg.
Get your pens and papers.
Get your pens and pencils. I just think it's important to talk to someone who can break down things that are very complicated. Mm-hmm. Because when you, I never took econ in high school or college.
I definitely dropped econ once in college.
You dropped it once.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to have someone who can explain it in digestible ways.
Yeah.
And especially when we talk about the USA credit rating and some other things that have been going on. So if you have a question for Professor Reed, please text it in now.
Text it. Call us later. Send an email. Send a voice note.
Send a voice note.
But, just shoot those questions over to us, and we will, if we can, we want to get them to him, make sure it's in context and more of a question than, like,
a statement?
Exactly.
A statement,
exactly.
Yes.
But, yeah, we're looking forward to having Professor Reed on the show today.
Absolutely. That is coming up after the 9:30 news. In hour number two, it's June 2nd.
What does that mean, Jane?
It's the first Monday of the month, which means we are going beyond the cheese.
I like the salute, beyond that cheese.
Dun, da, da, dun.
To space.
We're going beyond the cheese to highlight a business in Wisconsin outside of the dairy industry. Yeah. So we are going to be joined by John and Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company. They make hats.
What are they, Jane?
They are a haberdasher and a milliner.
There it is.
It's so cool. It really is so cool.
Make it absolutely perfect if they had their third partner was a cobbler. Oh.
Something to shoot for,
right?
I guess.
Yes.
But Steve Hayes also, I believe John and Kate and Steve are going to be joining us in the studio.
Excellent.
After the 10 o'clock news. So I would love to see hats come back. I would. That's me personally. I think hats are great.
I used to work with a couple gentlemen and not in the early 19th century who would wear in winter, they would wear hats. They would wear their hats, and it was it wasn't a wool hat. It was like
a fedora.
Yeah, it wasn't a fedora, but it was brimmed.
Right.
And it was one you had to go to a hat store to buy.
Yep.
And I just always thought it looked really nice. And I feel like at a certain age, I'm going to do that. But can I just make a real quick confession, Jane?
Sure, sure.
I want to rock a cowboy hat. But I also feel like it's not going to work in the long run because
I just don't know that cowboy hats work in Wisconsin unless you're outstate.
Yeah, but that's the thing is I want it to work because I think I'd look good in one. And that's what bums me out.
We can do a road trip to McLaughlin and Hayes because they're on Kinnikinnick Avenue.
Oh, I know exactly where they are. Yeah,
yeah. In Bayview. And ladies, if you have a wedding coming up or something, they make fascinators. They make really elaborate hats for the Kentucky Derby and things like that. So please stick around for Beyond the Cheese with McLaughlin and Hayes after 10 o'clock. Also next hour, we will lighten it up from 10:30 to about 10:50 with the segment we call Audio Sorbet.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Try and lighten things up a little bit, little palate cleanser for your ears. Yeah. Get away from the news. Get away from politics. The question today is, what is the chore you've been putting off?
The project.
What is the project? Yeah. The home project you have been putting off.
And you don't have to own a home to do this either. What is that project around the apartment, the, you know, the house?
Every time you walk past it, you go, oh, I should do that. I should really do that.
Or like me, you say all the time, I'm going to do that. And you're like,
never
three
happens.
Years later.
Yeah. What is the project that you need to get done and it's just not happening? And then we'll wrap it up as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Buzz Off edition. So stay tuned for that. With Beyond the Cheese, if you have a business or industry or something in your town that you think would be good for that, mm-hmm. something outside of the dairy industry, we would love to hear about it. So let us know at janesays@civicmedia.us, JaneSays, janesays@civicmedia.us. Right now, though, we did want to start off. We had Representative Mark Pocan was on the show with us on Friday, and he did say that he was going to be having another town hall over the weekend, which he did. And Derek Van Orden, who was invited, was not there.
What? Wait, whoa, whoa. Whoa.
I know. What a shocker. Mark Pocan was in Eau Claire, the 3rd Congressional District, mm-hmm. represented by Derek Van Orden. On Saturday, this was a town hall organized by Opportunity Wisconsin. Van Orden, of course, was invited to attend, but declined. I will say this, and quite seriously, Derek Van Orden has said that he and his family have been the target of threats.
Okay.
Which is very serious.
Yeah.
For all of them. I mean, judges are getting threatened. We have numerous representatives who are getting threatened. Mark Pocan does say, you know, I've had threats too, but I'm here. I guess that's their own individual decisions. But it is a reality that this is happening and people are threatening our elected officials.
And that is terrible. And if that's the case for this, and I find I understand it, but that also does not explain why previous invites have been ignored as well. And this is something that's going on countrywide as far as political leaders, specifically the GOP, ditching out on town halls, public events where they can be questioned and asked about policies, especially when you claim that SNAP benefits will not be cut and then you vote for cuts to SNAP. So that being said, absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. Violence is not encouraged. Violence is not welcome. That is not the way
it's
to
not
do
acceptable.
It. And I hope that he and his family are absolutely safe.
Derek Van Orden has said he prefers telephone town halls where the meeting isn't dominated by people he calls left-wing critics.
Oh.
And again, he's also said his family has gotten death threats and is vulnerable in an in-person setting. We have talked about this a lot. A lot of these town halls where people have showed up and this claim that they're all being paid by George Soros. Everyone's being paid off. If that were the case, I feel fairly confident that someone would have a copy of the check signed by George Soros for their appearance at these town halls.
Well, how long have they been saying that these are paid actors from George Soros? It's not just recently. This is years now. So you think about every paid actor over a course of 10, 20 years, he'd be broke on top of the billions of dollars he's given to campaigns as well. And also, no one's ever produced a check. No undercover right-wing activist has signed up to be a George Soros crisis actor or whatever and then gotten their check and you're like, here it is.
Here's
the proof.
We did it. Here's the proof. Yeah, this would have been right up Project Veritas's alley when they still had some air of legitimacy. That seems to have been gone. But you're right. No one has ever shown any proof that all of these people who are showing up at these town halls are just paid agitators. I don't buy it. No. I think people are showing up because they're worried and concerned. about what is going to happen with this budget.
And not all of these individuals who go there are dyed-in-the-wool liberals, leftists, Democrats. It's people of all stripes, of all backgrounds coming, not all backgrounds, I should say, but people who are just regular folk coming to these meetings who are worried about their Social Security, their Medicaid, their Medicare, their house, their kids, their child care, all these things that the politicians say they care about, yet seem to always vote against. But somehow their friends are able to buy their eighth boat.
Well, got to look out for the people who are bankrolling you.
And I need an eighth boat.
Mark Pocan, over the weekend at this town hall in Eau Claire, chided Republicans for cutting Medicaid benefits for nearly 14 million Americans, raising premiums for the Affordable Care Act, and cutting food assistance to 11 million mostly low-income kids through SNAP. The Republican budget also extends tax cuts passed in 2017 for, guess who, America's top earners.
Mm-hmm.
Resulting in a nearly $5 trillion national deficit over 10 years. Again, now we have said that Ron Johnson has come out very vocally against this.
Because he cares, Jane, about the working folks getting access to medicine, healthcare, child care.
No.
I thought
That's not what he's worried about. He's worried about mortgaging our children's future, Greg, through debt. Because this, and again, he seems to be one of the few Republicans who has admitted that this bill that passed the House will add massively to our deficit. I guess we give him credit for that.
No, I will not. No, sorry. I'm tired of giving people credit for doing the wrong, because he's essentially lying by omission. Because you had someone like Dr. Lyerly on this morning on Pat's show saying that her and he could share the same concern about exploding the deficit based on this bill. The problem is that we want to look at proper cuts. We want to look at proper funding. We want to look at taking down spending on all things, if that's the way of finding the money to make these cuts happen. But Ron Johnson wants to cut more social programs.
Right.
He wants to cut into entitlements. He wants to make people suffer. And those people voted for him. That's how he wants to be able to, quote, afford this, because he wants the massive tax cuts versus I'm worried about deficits exploding because of children, grandchildren, friends, putting this cost on them for the future. There's a different reason. And one is more based in caring about humans versus his is pure and unfettered greed.
He's worried about the future, not about climate change,
No.
He's worried about the deficit affecting his children and his grandchildren's future, but not about climate change. I'm trying to find this quote because he has said, we shouldn't spend one penny on climate change. Here it is. I mean, I love the outdoors, he said. Quote, we shouldn't spend a dime on climate change. We'll adapt. We're very adaptable.
I thought they didn't believe in evolution either. So
good point.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you really worried about your and there's no, I don't know his kids or grandkids. They're fine. They're going to be fine. They're his great, great, great grandchildren will be fine. As long as, you know, someone doesn't get into buying up land that falls into the earth. Like, they are going to be just fine. When he talks about his kids and grandkids, he puts them in the same class as my friends worrying about their kids and grandkids who, they're blue-collar folks. They're working-class folks. They're middle-class folks.
Their business doesn't have their own plane.
Well, they're poor, so they don't make businesses happen. So, Jane, let's just...
They're not job creators.
They're not job creators. But, yeah, I'm tired of this disingenuous concern from Ron Johnson about us, because he doesn't care about us, unless you are injured by the vaccine, of course.
Well, that's a whole other discussion. But, anyway, we can all relax, you guys.
Why?
Because... we're all going to die.
Really?
We have this direct from an Iowa senator's mouth. I wasn't sure about it, but she confirmed it over the weekend. We are all going to die. We have all the details coming up. Don't go away. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Jason.
Public Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Are you over 50 and constantly feeling tired, bloated, or just a little off? Don't ignore it. Those could be signs that your liver is crying for help. As we age, our liver, which is essential for metabolism, digestion, immunity, and detoxification, needs extra support and protection. If neglected, it can leave you feeling sluggish and constantly off your game. That's where Active Liver from New Nordic comes in. Available in easy-to-take tablets or delicious gummies, Active Liver combines powerful natural ingredients like turmeric, milk thistle, and globe artichoke extract to help support healthy liver function. With Active Liver, you're giving your body an essential daily defense against toxins from alcohol, fatty foods, and sweets, helping you reclaim your energy, improve digestion, lose the bloat, and strengthen your immunity so you can look and feel your best again. Protect your liver and give it the support that it deserves by making Active Liver from New Nordic part of your daily wellness routine. Find Active Liver in stores at your local CVS, Meijer Grocery, or online at Amazon or newnordicusa.com.
Medicare loses about $60 billion annually to fraud, errors, and abuse. June 2nd through the 8th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Learn more by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Michael Negron of the Small Business Majority.
You know, the Trump administration thinks that they're doing a solid for small business with their policies. And so having business owners out there talking about how, whether it's tariffs, whether it's potential cuts to healthcare, how it's going to hurt their bottom line, how it's going to hurt their consumers or their employees. I do think that will have a real impact. Every time he does something, he gets really bad feedback and he retreats in the face of it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and the Calvinator on the board coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on today, Todd Alba from 2 to 4 across the network, 2:35. Todd's going to speak with State Senator Kelda Royce. She is on the Joint Finance Committee. She'll have an update on the Wisconsin state budget. At 3 o'clock, Todd is joined by Wisconsin Watch reporter Tom Kircher. So join Todd today from 2 to 4 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up after the 9:30 news, economics professor Rick Reed will be here. If you have a question for the professor, please send it in. You can email it at janesays@civicmedia.us. You can text it in at 855-752-4842, or you can leave a voice note.
Yes.
If you have the Civic Media app, there's a place now you can record a voice note. So Professor Reed coming up after the 9:30 news. This happened over the weekend. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst was at a town hall recently.
Yeah.
And she was talking about Medicaid.
Yes.
And someone in the audience yelled out, if you make these cuts, people are going to die, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Calvin, I believe we have a clip from Senator Ernst. What was her response during this town hall meeting, please?
One point, they are not eligible, so they will be coming off. So we all are going to die. So for heaven's sakes, folks, okay, no.
For heaven's sakes, folks, we're all going to die.
Well, from a philosophical standpoint, she is not wrong.
No, she's not wrong.
But, I mean, dude. My dude.
Well, and then she came back Because there was a lot of blowback from this.
Yeah.
Then Senator Ernst came back with a response that she filmed in a cemetery.
Oh, it was great. I mean, whomever works for her, chef's kiss.
It was so smart. Calvin, I believe we have a little sample from that response. Can we play that, please?
Hello, everyone. I would like to take this opportunity to sincerely apologize for a statement that I made yesterday. Hello, everyone. I would like to sincerely apologize for a statement that I made yesterday at my town hall. See, I was in the process of answering a question that had been asked by an audience member when a woman who was extremely distraught screamed out from the back corner of the auditorium, "People are going to die." And I made an incorrect assumption that everyone in the auditorium understood that, yes, we are all going to perish from this earth.
Pretty much.
But?
So I apologize.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really glad that I did not have to bring up the subject of the Tooth Fairy as well.
Real sincere response there from Senator Joni Ernst.
Then she ends it with, "Get with Jesus."
Right.
Yep.
Go with God.
Yeah.
I don't know if, I mean, again, this is playing really well in some circles. Oh, she, lib tears. We love it. We love the lib tears. Joni Ernst, way to come back to it. I don't know that this is going to work so well for her in the long run.
I don't think so either. There's already a person who's running against her in Iowa for this seat, a Democrat, and they're running ads already.
We're using this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just dumb. Dumb stuff.
Jim from Brookfield is on the line. Good morning, Jim. Thank you for waiting. What did you want to say?
Good morning, Jane. Good morning, Greg and Calvinator. I just want to say, circling back to our beloved Senator Ron Johnson's never-ending fight for tax cuts for the wealthy, he has occasionally, as a lot of right-wing politicians, when they're finally called on it, you know, why do we have to keep giving tax breaks to the wealthy at the expense of the poor? You know, their classic line is, well, no poor man ever built a factory.
Right.
Okay, well, I would like to ask Mr. Johnson, first of all, how many factories has he built? And second of all, how many billions do you need to build a factory? And why, when you build these, the few that do, why can't you afford a living wage with health insurance? So let's make a list of all the factories Mr. Ron Johnson and the Uhlines and everybody else has created that have paid, you know, living wages with health care. And how many billions they still have after any of those expenditures.
Wait, if we could actually get him to sit down and answer a question, Jim, that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
I have all kinds of things I would love to ask Senator Johnson. But you make a really good point. And the one thing that I used to say, too, you know what? If you have a good enough job where you can afford a cleaning lady, you're a job creator, aren't you?
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate you calling.
As I said before, I'm not poor, but I'm also not rich, wealthy, but I'm a job creator.
If you hire a lawn service, aren't you a job creator?
But I love that he said this because once again, within the statement is a conversation, which is, yeah, poor people probably aren't job creators because poor people don't have access to the funds that you do. They don't have access to opportunity like you do. Maybe if we made it easier and the education out there, maybe there is a person who qualifies as poor. Is like, I want to open up my own food truck. I want to open up my own
juice stand, whatever,
hat store,
right?
Whatever. We make those opportunities possible so they can grab those bootstraps, pull them up, and become a job creator, and, you know, make a good living here in America. So when you say there poor people don't make jobs, okay, great. How do we change that?
We have news coming up next, and then when we return, economics professor Rick Reed will be here. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
We just don't know.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Department of Safety and Professional Services officials say Wisconsin residents could see additional delays to licensing and professional credentials after state Republicans voted to renew only five of the agency's 29 temporary positions. On Thursday, the Budget Writing Committee voted to renew five of the positions in the agency's call center and none of the license processing staff positions. Governor Tony Evers had previously called for replacing those temporary positions with 24 permanent positions in his biennial budget proposal. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is once again seeking landowners willing to host a gun deer hunt for hunters with disabilities this fall. The program has been offered in the state for over 30 years, and this year's hunt will take place from October 4th to October 12th. Applications to host a hunt through the program can be found on the Department of Natural Resources website and must be submitted by July 1st. To be eligible, interested landowners must have at least 60 acres available and be able to host at least three hunters. Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources officials say they've determined the cause of the brush fire that temporarily shut down Highway 2 in Ashland in early May. According to their investigation, a vehicle that was driving down the highway sparked the fire amid dry conditions. Officials say there was nothing intentional about how the fire started. DNR fire crews and a number of local fire departments managed to contain the blaze before it damaged any nearby structures. The fire burned a total of about 23 acres of grass and swampland. Two Western Wisconsin Oakleaf clinics are planning to relocate over the next couple of weeks. According to organization officials, a Rice Lake clinic will remain in the area but move to a new facility on Wisconsin Avenue on Monday. The clinic currently located in Cornell will move to a facility in Chippewa Falls on June 9th. Oakleaf Clinics officials also say they plan to begin offering urgent care services at the new Rice Lake location beginning on August 4th, which will be open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on weekends and holidays. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Hey ho, jazz fans. It's summer, and there's nothing better than outdoor jazz in the summertime in Wisconsin. So if you're in the Madison area, check out the Madison Jazz Festival from June 5th through the 15th. This year's attractions include Emma Dayhuff, the Edwin Doherty Five-Tet, the Emmy Castro Peruvian Jazz Quintet, the Sweet Tooth Jazz Band, and check out Jazz Sunday at the UW-Madison Memorial Union. Aw, yeah. And if you're up in northeast Wisconsin, check out Sundrop Days. Shauna was known for its delicious Sundrop manufacturing and distribution center. The annual festival is held the first week of June every year and kicks off this coming Friday. There's stuff for kids, crafts, live music, and of course, some dynamite soda. That's right, folks. Finally, there is a festival centered around a delicious soft drink, especially the real sugar version in a glass bottle, baby. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
We will have a little more of that smoky haze in the air today, otherwise partly cloudy, warm, and breezy. We'll get to the upper 80s for a high this afternoon. Scattered thunderstorms tonight and again tomorrow, and there could be some locally heavy rain of a half inch to an inch or more. Our high tomorrow will be cooler in the low to mid 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit outdoorstewards.org.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
The Trump administration arresting and deporting these supposed gang members without giving them due process is one of the steps to becoming an authoritarian government.
Dale, thank you so much for the call. And again, I second all of that. Bring them all back and afford them the due process that's a part of our nation, a part of this law, and a part of our tradition in administering justice.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, we're joined by dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser as we start the annual show of appreciation who make June Dairy Month possible.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're talking Econ 101. Joining us, because we are not economics experts. That's why we talk to the experts. Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. Good morning, Rick. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We wanted to talk about the downgrade, the U.S. downgraded by Moody's. All three major credit rating firms are no longer giving the United States their best rating. For those of us who have never taken economics and are just kind of peripherally aware of economics, what does this mean and why should we care?
We should all care. So probably the easiest thing to relate to is when you go to apply for a credit card or a loan, say to buy a car, the lender is going to run your credit report, and they run it through one of three credit rating agencies, and they collect data on you and they determine how likely it is you are to pay your bills on time. And based on that score, helps determine what your credit, what your interest rate is likely to be and how likely lenders are to be able to lend money to you. In a very simplistic way, this is kind of a very parallel situation. Nations, when they go to lend money or go to borrow money, get rated. And the three dominant ones that we care about in the United States are Standard & Poor's, Fitch, and Moody's. Standard & Poor's downgraded us in, about 2011. Fitch was just a couple of years ago, about 2023, and Moody's was the last one right to come to the show. And basically what it means is that the United States credit, in other words, when the United States sells bonds to be able to borrow money from anybody that's willing to lend it to us, we're slightly less perfect in terms of our ability to manage our debt and pay our bills.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, essentially, if I am hearing you correctly, Professor, that they are looking at the United States and how likely we are to be good for our debts, right?
Right. And actually, Moody's, in its commentary, offered a few comments. One of them is that the big knock on the rating resulted from our inability to manage our debt overall and come to agreement. And this has been something that's plagued both Republican and Democratic administrations and Congresses. So this isn't something that suddenly happened.
Right.
However, it did just suddenly happen.
Because of this latest downgrade by Moody's.
Right.
Right.
Rick, I have a question for you, because I remember when that push notification that came through my phone saying that Standard and Poor's had downgraded America's credit rating, and it sent shockwaves through the news. I mean, it was like, oh, okay, our economy is very bad, and we were like downgraded, I think, one level, and it wasn't the end of the world, but it was still a huge thing, and it's hard to come back from. Did Standard and Poor's ever upgrade us? Did we get back to the perfect across the three, or have we been sitting at that credit rating with them since 2010, 2011?
I believe we're sitting with the same credit rating since 2010, 2011.
Yeah. So the question I would have, because I'm an individual who has for the past, oh, good Lord, time's a construct, say 15 years, I've been working on getting my credit better and better and better, because for me as a person, it helps.
Yes.
How does that work for a country, though? What's the process? What's the process for, like, if America said, hey, we want to really get back on track and spend right and get that credit rate? Because if it hasn't changed since then, does it really matter then? Because as an individual basis, I feel like credit ratings are kind of a scam. I think it's a game. But how does the country on the whole
improve our credit score?
Yeah.
Right. Well, the big knock has been on our ability to manage our debt and our budgets. Moody's made commentary that it felt fairly confident that we were able to manage the value of the currency, which is really important, right? And that falls on the shoulders primarily of the Federal Reserve. They've done a great job of making sure that the value of the dollar has been relatively stable. But the thing that really has hurt us is the fact that we continue to run deficits and we don't seem to be able to get that under control. And as importantly, we don't seem to be able to set a clear path over time. So if you think about the current issues that are hitting us, the tariffs, all the issues around the tariffs have created a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace. And the issues around the administration is calling the Big Beautiful Bill that has now been approved by the House of Representatives. You know, that wasn't the thing that comes to my mind is that remember the film from this is a long time ago, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Sure.
And John Candy and Steve Martin are driving down the highway. They're trying to make time, and a driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn and saying, "You're going the wrong way." And Candy and Steve Martin go, "Ha ha ha! How do they know where we're headed?" right? Sure, buddy. Ha ha ha! You know, this is kind of the same thing in my. Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind was that Moody's is basically saying, "Folks, you got to get your act together." Congress and the administration are saying, "Okay, yeah, this is what we're going to do for our budget. We're going to have these tax cuts that we're going to reinforce. We're going to cut some spending in specific areas like Medicaid and SNAP." But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office has basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years. That's the kind of thing that Moody's is pointing to and saying, you know what, you've got enough debt. You've checked that box. It's time to reel it in a little bit.
Yeah.
And you need to start making some progress in that direction.
Oh my gosh. That is, I don't want to say that's a really, for me, my brain, that's a really good comparison. And now as a way of thinking and talking about it, that's a really scary way of putting it, that they're basically saying, "Hey, here's how you do it." And we're like, "Cool, we're going to do it a different way. See you in a couple of years."
Well, and I guess, again, I go back to the IRS under President Biden, because they had hired so many more IRS agents who were going after the bigger tax cheats, which brought in over $1 billion when they were doing that. And now they've X'd that out. So we don't have that revenue coming in either. So it's kind of a rolling ball that doesn't seem to be stopping anywhere, does it?
Exactly. No, it doesn't. And it seems like it may be headed in the wrong, direction.
Right.
you know, one of the great challenges though, is that we talked a little while ago about the U.S. bonds.
Yes.
And the fact that the yield just went up on the U.S. bonds because they became less attractive. And that preceded Moody's downgrade. And there have been a number of factors, not the least of which is the fact that part of it had to do with China selling off a lot of their holdings of the U.S. Treasury bonds after they were threatened with a very steep tariff level.
Right.
And, you know, you can interpret it however you want. The easy interpretation is that China was saying, "Okay, if you're going to charge us with tariffs, take this." And they sold off a bunch of U.S. Treasury bonds. And what that really did was it effectively depressed the price of the bond, which raised the yield rate. Bottom line is it makes it more expensive for the U.S. government to borrow money moving forward, right?
On that topic, Rick, so, you know, in China sold bonds. Who do they sell them to? Do they sell them back to the United States? Do they sell them to other countries? Can they sell them to individuals? Or because if they're selling them off, I'm just wondering who gets them in the long run then.
Yeah. An easy way to think about bonds is kind of like cars.
Yeah.
You've got the brand new car coming off the assembly line, and then you've got the used car market, right? And so when the U.S. issues a bond, it's minting a brand new car, a brand new bond, and they sell it to the market, and it matures in, you know, 1, 2, 10, 30 years.
Right.
In that period of time, that bond can be sold on the open market to anybody that is willing to buy it. So it's kind of like the used car market in that analogy. But much like the used car market, it doesn't exist in isolation. So if the used car market is starting to show signs of price instability, that impacts the new bond market as well. So when already issued bonds are generating a lower price, translating to a higher yield to the buyer, that means that the U.S. government, when it issues new bonds, has to compete against that, and they have to kind of respond in kind.
If you're just joining us, economics instructor Rick Reed is our guest. He's with Fox Valley Technical College, just talking about Econ 101, trying to break things down for those of us who are not economists. And we had talked about bonds the last time that you were on because, from what I understand, Rick, bonds were like the most solid of bets. Bonds were always a pretty solid bet, right? You are buying from the U.S. government. You are helping to fund the U.S. government by buying bonds. Is that accurate?
Correct. You're supplying the lendable funds to the government.
I'm loaning them money.
Right.
I'm loaning them money. But then when the interest went up, that was bad for the government, but good for me as the holder of the bond?
Exactly. Because the reality of part of what you're buying with a U.S. government bond is a very secure instrument. So far, knock on wood, the government's never failed to pay its debt to any of the bondholders, right? So from that perspective, you're basically getting a kind of a sure thing. When bond prices go down and the yield rate goes up, it's good for you as an investor. It's horrible for the government because now they're
paying out more,
paying a higher interest on anything they need to borrow money for.
I guess the question, and I've asked this question to a lot of situations where we are investing in the government, whether it's our Social Security, our unemployment insurance. What happens if the government can't pay? Is it just it's too bad, so sad, or is it? I mean, do I have action to get my money because I bought in good faith from you and now you're saying you can't pay me? Is it a you risk it with the bond even though it's so surefire, or is it something where I can come back and honestly we have to go to break, so if you want to answer this on the other side of the break because it's going to take a little bit longer. But
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We are going to continue with Econ 101 on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Here's another community reminder from 107.5 WLAK. Ruby's Pantry distributes the second Saturday of each month. And you can check out the schedule at rubyspantry.org. That's rubyspantry.org. Ruby's Pantry, the second Saturday of each month from 7:30 to 9 a.m. And they do that at SMC Limited on Griffin Street in Avery. Another community reminder for you from 107.5 WLAK.
This fall, there's only one place to be, Camp Randall Stadium. Wisconsin football returns with can't-miss matchups, including Maryland, Iowa, Ohio State, and more. From the first touchdown to the fifth quarter, game days in Madison are packed with excitement, tradition, and unforgettable memories. Seats and tickets are now on sale. Lock in your spot and make sure you don't miss a moment of the action next season. Visit UWBadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS to secure your seat today. Wisconsin football game day starts here, and we'll see you at Camp Randall.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Michael Negron of the Small Business Majority.
You know, the Trump administration thinks that they're doing a solid for small business with their policies. And so having business owners out there talking about how, whether it's tariffs, whether it's potential cuts to health care, how it's going to hurt their bottom line, how it's going to hurt their consumers or their employees. I do think that will have a real impact. Every time he does something, he gets really bad feedback and he retreats in the face of it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. And just a reminder, make sure you have the Civic Media app. Mm-hmm. Our statewide Scani Summer Text to Win contest gets underway today. You have a bunch of chances to win. Listen in the 7, 11, 2, and 4 o'clock hours for that hour's keyword. Yep. You want to text in that word via the Civic Media app and be in the running for some fantastic prizes that could but probably won't change the course of your entire life. Download the Civic Media app and be ready. In the 11 o'clock hour, Tom Hartman will have the word for you to text in. Good luck.
We were talking to Rick Reed, who is an economic instructor at Fox Valley Technical College. And before we went to the break, I posed a question that I will sum up very quickly. If I, the investor, invest in U.S. bonds and the government can't pay yields on those, what is our recourse as individuals or anybody?
Yeah, basically sell the bond is what you would do, because it, the likelihood of them saying we're not going to pay, period. I don't think it'll be like a light switch where one day we can pay, the government can pay, and the next day it can't, with no news about that in advance. More likely what would happen is that if the government was unable to pay, and really what we're talking about is not that it can't pay, but that it can't pay on time.
Right.
The reality of it is that would push the value of the bonds down pretty considerably, push the yields up pretty considerably. And I think what you'd see is a bunch of investors that are holding bonds trying to sell them very quickly. The likelihood of us going from where we are today to that scenario, it would take, hopefully it would take years, maybe decades. I don't think you're going to see it happen overnight. What's more likely, though, is that we continue down the path of having an eroding credit rating as a nation. And if that continues to happen, and if the government, well, one of the things that happened, I think it was back in 2012, 2013, where the government basically was shut down. There was a group of congressmen that basically said, if we can't balance the budget, we're just not going to pass the bill.
Right.
We're not going to pass a bill that doesn't balance the budget. Noble cause, a really bad way to do it. And the reason it's a bad way to do it is that it basically raised the question of the stability of the government and the ability to pay its bills on time. And that's going to have an impact on attractiveness of bonds to buyers.
Cassandra on the live stream is essentially asking the same thing. If this House bill does not pass in the Senate, what happens then? Do we default on our debt, or is it just more likely that they're going to have to do another continuing resolution?
Right, they're going to have to continue to. We're going to patch this thing up as long as we can. Now, historically, what we've had if you look over the last 10 years, we've had really low interest rates, right? Really low interest rates. And so that's enabled the government to be able to borrow money and not worry quite as much about balancing the budget urgently, right? Because the interest rate, you know, if you're paying, 2%, it's a lot better than if you're paying 3%, 4%, 5%.
Sure.
That time is going to start to run out, and we're going to start to see the interest payments start to rise pretty quickly if we're not careful.
Well, and weren't our interest rates held not unnecessarily, but they were held low for a long time purposefully.
Right. Yeah, right. The Federal Reserve in response to the Great Recession of 2008-2009, one of the things that it did was loaded its balance sheet. Basically, they made as much money, lendable money, available as possible.
Right.
Because one of the things that you don't want to have happen at the end of a recession, during a recession, or at the end of the recession, is having qualified borrowers not being able to access funds quickly and relatively inexpensively. You want them to be able to borrow the money to be able to invest to stimulate the economy.
Right.
The Federal Reserve kind of went overboard on that a little bit.
Well, because they kept them
for quite a while.
Low for a long time.
You bet.
Yeah.
This is why we have experts on, folks, because Jane and I, we are not experts. We're not lawyers, doctors, or economists. We are all those things adjacent.
Yes. That's why Rick Reed is here, an economic instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We've got time for maybe one more question, Rick.
Yeah, Lori from Hayward asked the question, do you think that we should raise, do you think the Social Security cost of living adjustment should be raised this year?
Well, historically, it's raised based on the cost of living. They raise it based on the CPI from the prior year, and it's voted on by Congress to be able to enable it. So if you're receiving Social Security, you want it raised as much as possible. If you're not receiving Social Security, you're kind of, you don't really care much until you start, getting close to it. So should it or shouldn't it be? The standard practice has been that it's raised in accordance with the CPI.
There was an increase last year, I believe. Okay. I believe there was an increase in the cost of living last year. He is an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. We do Econ 101 with Rick Reed to try and break things down. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Stay with us. News is coming up next. And then when we return, we go beyond the cheese with the McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Eight people in Boulder, Colorado are still recovering after police say a 45-year-old man threw a makeshift flamethrower into their crowd. They were calling for the release of hostages in Gaza. The suspect was calling Free Palestine during the attack. Former FBI agent and ABC News contributor Brad Garrett with questions.
Did he plan it? Did anybody help him? Maybe, maybe not. This looked like a lone actor attack to me, but we'll see. And they'll have a picture of this guy and may already before they decide who's going to charge him and when they're going to charge him.
One person burned is still in critical condition. A new round of hazy smoke entering the U.S. from Canada, where wildfires have been raging for weeks now. People in Minnesota and the Dakotas.